It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Bullshit work is what we're going to be talking about today. All the stuff that weighs us down. Why are we doing it? Why do we continue to do it? Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. It's Josh Levine. Today we have the amazing Natalie Hoop on. She's a strategic ops partner for startups, of experienced veteran COO, and she is going to be talking to us about what happens when organizations get bogged down, or why organizations and really talented people get bogged down in the work that doesn't matter, and how that burns us out, and what to do about it. Natalie, bullshit work, Hoop, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on, or I should say the sort of anti-bullshit work, Natalie Hoop. Let's go with that. How are you? Thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this.
I'm obviously very excited about this term that you brought up in our sort of pre-call. Your experience, you've been a COO for tech startups for a while throughout your career, and now you're a fractional COO. One of what I'm fascinated with is the systems that kind of get built up, the human systems that get built up inside of an organization. Describe what you have seen as someone with your sort of perspective and longitude around the organization and how that, like, what once worked, it stops working. Like, what happens there, and why does this occur?
Yeah, so there's kind of two pieces with it. The first is, you know, when a company is first starting out, the founder does a lot of the work tasks, you know, it very in the weeds. And so what happens is they create a system that works specifically for them, but it is not a repeatable system. It does not work for a variety of different learners or people, and it's not scalable. And so what ends up happening is the team comes in, you start enlarging the company, but the founder is very much, this has worked for me, so we're going to continue doing it this way.
Right. I have been successful. This is why my business is successful. And so that's, I figured it out. Why reinvent it, right? That's kind of the attitude I'm inferring here.
Yeah. And it's something really connected to them of, this is my business. This is my reputation. This is what I'm creating.
This is my
so
baby.
So I want it to feel this way. But again, what you do with five, you know, clients is going to be vastly different than what you do when you have 200 clients or 1,000 clients. And what you and how you operate as a startup or a company that does, you know, that's been around for a year, is going to be vastly different than what you do when your company's been around for 5 years. And so what happens is we live in a life of disruption. There is constant changes, AI, new tech, new people or ideas. But if you are so bogged down of, this is what works for my company, you are basically tying the hands of your employees behind their back and saying, go swim and figure it out. But I want it exactly this way. And yeah, and it just makes your employees miserable and unhappy, and it does not allow for the success of your company.
So translate that then. What I think I hear you saying is that the founder will essentially make these new amazing hires, but then gives them the charter, or like the endows them with being their hands. The founder's hands, right? So it's really just scale me. And that limits, like, here is how it's done. And because I'm newer than the founder, I'm going to do it that way just by hierarchy.
Correct.
What, so translate that, like, how, describe what, well, let's come at it from a different way. What is bullshit work? Right? What is this bullshit work? And how does that evolution cause that to happen and get embedded inside of an organization?
Yeah, so bullshit work is work that has to get done, but really does not need any type of thought or human people to do it. Or it's work that you used to do it this way, but your product doesn't even need it anymore. Like it doesn't matter. You are dotting an I just for the sake of dotting an I. It does not move your company forward.
Before you go, do you have examples of bullshit work
Yeah.
that maybe will help us kind of imagine this? I know that people
Yeah.
listening are being like, I know exactly what you're fucking talking about, but let maybe give some specifics.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is when I was working full time. I worked for a company that was a SaaS startup, but also had a project management element to it. And what was happening was the employees could only handle five clients at a time. And so the company's gross margin was a negative 22%. They were never going to be profitable. And so I, went to the CEO and I said, "This is really concerning." And she was like, No, this is fine. Like, we don't need to show this yet. We've got plenty of years to figure out how to make a profit." So I went to the project management team and said, "Let me observe you. What's going on in your day-to-day?" And what ended up happening was they were reinventing the wheel every time they did a project. So if it was a project A, every single person did it differently. What good looked like was different, and they didn't know where to start. So they started the whole brain function from the very beginning. So I ran data, I pulled the 20 most common projects that they did. I worked with the team. We created standard operating procedures. We created resource guides. So if somebody needed to do this project, they could literally open something up. It would tell them how to do it. They'd do it, and it was done. So to them, it eliminated all of this unnecessary research that they didn't have to do anymore. It allowed them to understand what the final project should really look like. And at the end of the day, it had all the resources already for them, so they could already know things that were approved and vetted and just move forward. And so they went in 4 months, they went up to a 46% gross margin positive. And the team went from 5 to 21 clients per rep, and their employee satisfaction went up to 100%. And the whole reason for it is because I took all the bullshit work that was wasting their time, and they could focus on the stuff that needed them, that needed their thought process, their understanding, their relationship management, their uniqueness. And we got rid of anything that didn't matter. And
Right. So,
then the complexity, right? So we did all the easy stuff. So then they could focus on the complex stuff that you couldn't replicate.
you're creating a system, or you're looking at the one-offs and creating a system that enables the human to do the work that they feel valued to do. Because there is always, or at least the assumption is that there's always going to be emails to answers and spreadsheets to fill out and reports to do. And your thesis is if you're able to observe and identify and then create, let the bots or the machines or even just the system do it, you're going to be able to let those people do more of what they do best. And so you're going to get more value per person. Is that the right?
Very true. And one of my fractional clients, they to like, to expand on this, they came to me very frustrated with their sales team. And they said, "I think I need to replace my sales team. They aren't selling. They're not, if I sell, I can sell X amount, but they're selling and they're selling a
X
very
minus
small amount.
whatever,
There's
yeah.
something they're doing wrong, right?" And so the immediate thought when somebody's not performing is it's a them issue. They are the ones that aren't doing it. And something that I was trained very early on in my career, which as HR, you know, is there really is a skill versus will. You have to identify, is this a will issue or a skill?
Skill issue or a will issue.
Yeah. And if it's skill, you can train or provide resources because they want to do a good job. And we're the ones that are failing them. And in this case, that's exactly what was happening is he was very stuck in his founder process where he reviewed every single lead. He arbitrarily decided who he thought was going to be a good lead. He waited weeks to send them to the sales team just because he was inundated with other work. And by the time the team got there and was having these meetings, it turned out the leads weren't qualified. So 5 minutes with the sales team having a conversation, and they're like, none of these people will actually buy. Like they point blankly are telling me on the call they are not interested. And so I'm not meeting with people I can actually sell to. So talking with them, talking with the founder, watching the system, I created using Typeform, basically a logic that would pre-qualify the leads without any manual person. It would go into a funnel to get the meeting scheduled immediately with a round robin. And then also, if they didn't schedule a meeting, there was automated reminders. They went through different pipelines and funnels. And by the end of it, the sales cycle decreased by 71% from a
Holy
timeline.
shit, that's crazy.
Right.
That's a crazy amount of
And
time.
the sales team, which, as we all know, commission, huge, had a 238% increase in sales in 30 days.
Pop the champagne.
It
Okay,
was, but
how did you?
it's the people needed to do the work of selling, and we were bogging them down with reminding and emailing and following up with people who were never going to be qualified.
How did you convince the founder that the change needed to happen, right? Because as we established,
Yeah.
you get your hooks in and it's like, this is how I've done it. What was that human process? Because really, like, I love that you're thinking about and you don't have a tool. You're like, this is the tool to solve it. You're like a systems thinker. I love this. And there's a human problem at the root of all of this.
The thing to really think about is, again, this is change management. So really explaining to them what's in it for them. And so from a founder perspective, it was okay, we can eliminate the sales team, but you're going to have to go find new salespeople. You're going to have to retrain them. There is a ramp up period. You are going to effectively basically cripple your company. And at the same point, now you're going to have to do all the sales calls when you're trying to do everything else until we can ramp them up. Or we can take a couple of weeks and experiment, do a couple of tests, obviously approved by everyone, and see if changing a few processes can make us move any further, move that needle to where he wants to be. And so that was really what it was, is like, hey, the worst that happens is we do this, you hate it, and then we just roll it back. It's not permanent. And that understanding of this change is not a fixed change that once you do it, you don't have an option to go backwards, I think eliminates a lot of the founder being like, oh, okay, I can do this for a couple of weeks. It's not, this is worth trying now.
Look at all this. So you did actually two things, right? You said we can do what you are suggesting, but look at all this pain it can, you have to go through. I'm not saying it's not possible, but then I'm also saying before we go through all that pain, which you really don't want to do anyways, here's an experiment. We're not committing to it. And I love the framing of the change as experiments because there is always a person or group of people who just don't, for whatever reason, good or ill, don't want to change. They just don't. It's just a human thing. And so it can, what it does is it reduces their risk, right? Like, or their fear, really, if we're talking about the humans. And that to me is has been one of the biggest unlocks in helping an organization do something different, is framing it as an experiment. And but what I loved about your frame is it's not just, hey, let's try something new. It's, if we don't, this is what's going to happen. And gosh, how painful is that? And
Right.
I just think that's a really, really compelling aspect of this.
And I think it's necessary because, again, founder or employees, they want to be heard, you know? And so if your founder, again, their business, they've created, their identity gets mixed in with the company itself. But if you just say to them, you know, yes, we can do whatever you want, but that's not our only option. Let's look at a couple of options and decide which one to try. And again, to your point, try. And then if it doesn't work, we go right to your thing and we're good.
Yeah.
It allows them to be like, oh yeah, well, the risk of trying this is so small compared to doing it the other way, where I know I'm going to feel that pain.
Path of least resistance, right? It's just physics. You're gonna like get these people forward. How so let's get practical. For the folks that are listening, there is a certain degree of bullshit work. How do we determine what is offloadable? And then what would be the first thing we do to start to do that? Can I do it? I guess maybe my first question is, can I do it as an individual for my own self? Because you've talked about a company and you've talked about a team. So let's go through that one at a time. How do I determine what of my bullshit is something that I can do, I can push elsewhere, I can make a system work.
Yeah, so I like to do this exercise again with business owners or founders, but it's going to be annoying, but it's fast, I swear. You're going to just take a Google Word doc and you are going to list every single task that you do. I mean, everything from I process my own payroll to, you know, I schedule my meetings, I follow up every single thing you do, you're going to write it down.
You're going to have this up on your screen for like a
Up on.
week, right?
Yep.
Or something like that. I'm thinking you're
Yeah,
like, oh, it's a
usually,
different
again, I
time.
think a week is good and you're going to get 95% of it.
A week.
But again, re the stuff that is the most time consuming and monotonous, you're going to see right away. And that's the stuff we care about, right?
Ugh, I love
Oh,
this
every
already.
day I'm coming in and I'm posting on LinkedIn. Okay, great. That needs to go. Great. And then I want you to basically take a green highlighter, again in the system. So just Google Word, type the highlighter green. And I want you to list everything that only you can do. You cannot delegate it, you cannot automate it. If you do not do it, there is no one else. And what ends up happening is when you really look at it, do you have to click accept on the meetings? No, I can either automate it or farm it out. Do you have to be the one to post? No, I don't have to be the one to post. Do you have to be the one to call that customer back? Well, no, I have a whole sales team. I can have the sales team call. And it's really understanding what is the stuff that only you can do. So, individual founder, can anyone else do your strategy for you? No, can't farm it out. Can somebody decide what your company's vision is? No, only you can decide your company's vision. And those are the things that matter. And then the other stuff is, okay, great. Now that we know that, let's look at the rest of the list you didn't highlight and anything that you can automate, you don't even need to do. It's a waste of your time. Anything that you can create a process for or that, like, highlight them in yellow. Those are the ones that are taking your time, and we need to remove them from you. And then once you get that bucket, you can say, okay, great, these are the tasks. Is it hiring an EA? Is it automating it? Is it using a different software program that will do it for? Great. Okay. Yep. Is it worth paying $10 a month to eliminate 20 tasks that take you 2 hours? Yes. Yes, it is.
I'm going to push back on, I think, another human assumption, which is that we know with 100% confidence what only we can do. Because I'm thinking, well, I post on LinkedIn and I communicate on LinkedIn. And you're like, only I have my, and of course we can challenge these, but do you find with your clients that there's something that's green that you go, really?
Well, right. And 100%, because there is an ego attached to it, right? And
Yeah,
again,
exactly.
I have an ego. We
We
all have
it's fine.
egos,
It's
right?
fine, right?
But there are going to be things that come up immediately that they're okay with. So if you focus on
Low
that
the
stuff,
low hanging fruit, the low
right?
hanging fruit. That's what we're talking about. Yes.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So then you go back to them a couple months later when this is all, and then you say, okay, great. Let's revisit the list now, because where your company is now is vastly different than 6 months from now, or 3 months, or however fast you're moving.
Yeah.
They're a lot stricter then. So then suddenly the things that they said were green that only they can do
Yeah.
suddenly don't look as important anymore, because they've been able to do all these other things that they weren't able to do that only they can do. And so they start reevaluating that. And you can start pushing back now. Because at this point, you've proven,
You've
oh, I just saved 10 hours a week because I got a virtual EA.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, now that we've done that and you've seen what this saves you, where else can we find time for you?
Let's bring in the hot new topic of AI and these bots. Are you finding that your clients are able to well, I can keep this open, right? So my question is like, I'm already thinking, and it's something that I'm already, like using, creating my own bots for. It's like the kind of new things that you can remove that maybe previously weren't or are more efficient, becoming more efficient. What are you seeing? How is AI facilitating in a different, new, better, or worse way, the process that you're talking? Because I just feel like this is a job made for AI.
And a lot of the case time it is. And so let's first start by there are pros and cons to AI, right? The pro is it's going to take the low-hanging fruit, the stuff you don't need a human being for. But there is this like fear that it's going to take over everything. And maybe in 20 years it will, okay? But right now we're just looking at reality and where we are. That's not going to replace a creative marketing person. I don't care how much you tell me it is. It's not. What it will replace is the need for, them to design it in a specific way. They can input inputs in and it can spit it out. Great. But that creativity, AI can't do for you. So I always challenge people to look at AI as a calculator, right? I mean, way back when, I'm gonna like age myself, when I had my first retail job, I learned how to write a P&L with a paper and pencil and had to do the math, right? We have calculators and Google Sheets and Excel. That does it for you. You put the formula in, it fixes everything for you, you're done. It is a tool. And so the question is the tool is only as good as the operator who is using the tool. So if you put in garbage data, if you don't know how to be creative, if you don't have a voice or you're not authentic, just going to spit out garbage. So you need that human component to do that.
What do
Do
you,
I think,
yeah.
sorry, go right ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what are the characteristics of the yellow tasks that make you go, AI? Like, because now it's one of your tools, right? Like, I called out that I think the reason why you're so good at what you do is because you look at it as a system and not like what is the, let me sell you a tool. You're like, it could be anything. So now AI's there. When does that come up? And when is it useful? And when is it, Actually, maybe the question is, when is it not a yellow thing that's not an AI-able task?
Okay, so I'm going to actually back up a second because I think there's a first question to ask.
Love it.
Okay, so the first question is, are you using AI because you want to say it's AI, or are you using AI because it is the best option to solve that task? And this is something that I find a lot of companies are doing right now is they want the new fancy CRM because it says it has AI in it. They want the new fancy, transcript because it says it has AI.
It's going to solve all my problems. It's the
Right.
savior.
And it's not, right? It's not. So the question is, what is the task you need to eliminate? And what is the best and most reasonably cost way to eliminate it? So, to your point, if it's a yellow task and you need to move information from A to B, yes, AI will do that for you. You can build a bot, you can use a Zap, you can do 15 different integrations. You are moving it and you just set up an alert. So if it breaks, it notifies you and you can go back in as a human being and fix it. Great. That is going to be low cost than me paying a student or somebody to literally just hit copy and paste. That is a good way to eliminate. But if you tell me that you need to speak to a human being and build a relationship, AI is never going to replace relationships. It'll try. But it's not going to replace that human connection. It's not going to replace being authentic. So the question is, are you just doing it because it's a cool tool and you think it's going to be cost savings? Or are you saving it? Or are you using it because it really is going to solve a problem and you won't have to touch it again? And Klarna was a great, company that found out they were going to eliminate all their customer service people and use AI.
Yeah.
6 months later, they brought them all back and said, oops.
Oops.
Because AI can't do the complexity of human emotions and relationships. It's just not going to be built that way
Yeah.
to meet that need.
I mean, I suppose it's better than the, like the getting lost in voicemail hell, plus one four, but it's not nearly as good as actually a human, right? So you can upgrade, but you can't downgrade.
Look at Chewy. Chewy, there is no plus one, press one. There is no IVR for Chewy. You literally dial the phone number and a
And it's a
human
human.
being answers in three rings.
And you think that that's why they're still
Yeah,
thriving. Yeah.
absolutely.
I mean, we are
And
talking about pet people here, right? Chewy is about pet people. So it's like they want to. I remember, if I can just digress for a second. So, early days, I got a chance to sit in the Zappos call center, and they were the original like answer as a human. And they were trained to listen to hear if there were a bark or in the background, and actually pick up on that and say, "Oh, do you have a dog?" And immediately, right? Like that is the relationship builder. That's what they're doing. And so that's what I think when you say, someone's answering, that's the value. And you just can't do it. Even if you do it, it just doesn't feel right. So I don't know. That's what that sparked for me.
but it's true. But now also let's look at what Chewy does do. It does automated reordering for you. You can go in and update your pet's account for certain things. You can add your pet. There are so many technological things that they have created that you can do. So it's not that they're not automating anything. It's not that they're not using tech to build that customer relationship or that customer journey. They are just being very intentional on if you need to call us, it is because a problem has gone wrong. And the last thing you want to do is fight to get the answer you want. This is where we're going to invest it because that ROI will save the relationship and keep our customers loyal.
It's taking in the larger perspective. All right, so we're almost here at the end, and I want to you did you I loved the exercise of listing everything you did and highlighting it. I think that's super useful. What would you advise the manager that's listening? How would they go about and do the same thing or have their individuals do the same thing? And yeah, how do you think about that for a leader to assess their system?
Yeah, so 100%, your team, it is actually going to know things better than you will. So yes, if you are looking to fix a system or optimize your team or adjust their capacity, anything, yes, go to them, because 9 times out of 10, they can point blankly say, if we remove A, I'll get an hour of time back every day. If you remove B and C, our customers are going to be thrilled and we'll lose 20% of our call volume. And then again, you have to verify. So you trust and verify that what the information is accurate. But yes, I would go to them because they're going to tell you exactly for their position what you need to eliminate. And then once you do that, again, you do it to every position. And then you start figuring out, okay, if I eliminate 20% of their workload, and they're going to get 20% back capacity, how do we then utilize them? And chances are they'll be able to tell you that too.
Oh,
You
for
know what would
sure.
be great is if we could add this. Wow, that's really, I think that this will help us keep 10% of our customers from churning. Yeah, let's try it. Again, experimenting. Nothing has to be written in stone, and we can always go back if it doesn't work. But if we don't try, we're just doing the same thing over and over again. And that's innovation dies. You know, companies die when they don't innovate.
But we're also trying to be more efficient, right? And that's the tension that we always see. And that's why I think this was so interesting. Natalie Hoop, strategic ops partner for startups, Fractional COO. You can learn more about her at nataliehoop.com. I really appreciate this. Was really insightful and very enlightening. I just love the way that you're a systems thinker and the promise of helping people get rid of that one thing that they all hate, which is bullshit work. So thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio, sharing it with our community.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.